like to call the ADA board meeting for Thursday, April 30th to order, please. And it's about 12 o'clock. Bryn, would you roll call the board members, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Here.
Mr. Day.
Here.
Mr. Booth.
Here.
All present.
Would you continue with staff and public?
Okay. As I appoint you, can you please state your name and your organization? We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, ADA.
Back in the corner.
Bob Jessic, ADA. Alan Bailey, Petroleum Union.
Lauren Sandra, ADA.
Dan Britton, Fairbanks, Hyderabad. Mark Figueroa, Rosa Figueroa.
Jeff Danjuan, ADA.
Jeff Leonard, ADA.
Miranda Stubbs.
Kurt Gibson, Hill Corp.
Carson Rodvik, ADA.
Back in the corner.
Beaverson, ADA. Diane Bloomer, PRL.
Matthew Siebert, Crowley Petroleum.
Tom Erickson, ADA.
Mark David,
ADA.
Matt Harris, ADA.
Michael Lamb, ADA.
Tim Gallagher, HDR Engineering.
Jerry Jude, Carpenter Lawn.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Quinn Kempinen, ADA. Do we have any public on the phone? Any public on the phone? No public on the phone at this time.
Thank you, Chris. Before us is item number four, the agenda. We have a chance to look at that. Look for a motion for approval.
Move the agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Any comments?
Mr. Chairman, I do. On this agenda, I see under new business 7E loan resolution L15-5. I just wanted to put on the record I am the chairman of the board for Minnetota Corporation, so I will be abstaining from any discussion or vote on that particular item today.
Okay. Any comments from board members? All right. Any other discussion on the agenda before approval? Any objections to the agenda? The agenda is approved. Next item up is item number five, public comments. I remind everybody, please state your name, affiliation, if any, and limit your public comments to 3 minutes. I will start with anybody online. Is anybody online wishing to comment? Anybody online? Hearing nobody online, anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? Anybody in the boardroom? No one in the boardroom? Okay, I'll close public comments. Next up is prior minutes for March 26, 2015. That's item number six. You have it in your packet. Any comments?
Has joined the conference.
I'll take a motion.
I'll move the minutes.
In a second. All right, so the minutes before us, any comments, corrections, additions, deletions from any board members? Any objections to the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are approved for March 26th. Under new business, just kind of backing up here, you'll see that the agenda is a little bit different today. We're having two updates, both the IEP project and Pentex, and then we're going to go to executive session, and then we'll deal with loan resolutions and director comments afterwards, just in case somebody doesn't have the agenda in front of them. With that, John, under new business, the IEP.
Yes, sir. Item 7A is an update on the interior energy project. This time I'm asked about Bob Shepchick to present. Call on members of the team as needed.
Good afternoon. For whoever's online, I'm Bob Shepchick. I'm the team leader of the IEP team. This month, your IEP portion of the report will be brief. Rather than try and death by PowerPoint you, the PowerPoint this month will be provided relative to the Pentex acquisition and the work that the due diligence team has done on Pentex. I will provide a brief update on what has happened with legislative action, and as a result of that, our next steps forward. For the legislative action,
joined the conference.
There were two actions before the legislature that affected the financing tools for the Interior Energy Project: House Bill 105 and the capital budget. House Bill 105, the IEP portion expanded the geographic flexibility that allowed ADA financing tools for options other than the North Slope. It also expanded options other than just LNG to include propane and small diameter gas lines. It did provide intent language that the financing tools only be used for the advancement of the IEP goals, and that ADA use an open and competitive process to select its private partners. It required ADA board approval by resolution of an IEP plan prior to further use of the financing tools that were part of Senate Bill 23, and had a number of requirements for that plan, and provided reporting requirements to the legislature. Additional things that were in House Bill 105 were an updated bond and loan authorization amounts that were cleanup language for ADA's operating practices, and it also removed a number of stale bond authorizations. During the session, which you got updates during, and you could all read about it in the newspaper, there was considerable review and questioning. We had six committees that we went through. You know, our approach was to respond as completely and fully as possible, and sometimes, that was a time-consuming, and on occasion, you know, as we got to the end and we were being held as part of the end of the session, it was frustrating. But overall, you know, the bill resulted in the ADA tools to advance IEP that as an organization we were looking for, and as a board that you'll be able to take advantage of now. It did pass the House 37-2, despite all the things you saw and occurred. It passed the Senate 20-0, and there was some tension over additional bond authorizations that the House had put back in, and so it went back to the House without those additional authorizations, and the House conferred 38-0 with two people being gone. So as far as House Bill 105, the guidelines and intent language matched the way ADA intended to perform anyway, and so to say that you need an open and competitive process to pick your partners, and that you need a plan to go forward, were not things that we found at all objectionable, and it certainly gave members of the House comfort that the process was proceeding, and the reporting requirements will keep them more in the loop as we go forward, and I think that will help that, you know, as it is before the legislature in future sessions. On the legislative appropriation, the capital budget did include removal of that North Slope restriction on that 2013 appropriation, and so the ADA board has the ability to use the remaining capital funds, which are approximately $45 million, toward a project either to the North Slope or toward South Central or somewhere else in the state. So pending transmittal to and signature from the governor, which of course we fully expect, you know, ADA has the tools to move forward, and you know, as a team, we're looking to do that in the same manner that we described to you in our February and March reports. Just a little appreciation first. You know, the governor made us one of his two or three top priorities for getting out of town, and that helped a lot. Second, you know, the legislature, you know, 37-2 and 20-0 is more than respectable. It's good. And the fact that even though we were held to near the end, the fact that we are not in Juneau still having the same discussion and we're taken off, you know, and dealt with by the legislature is clearly something that as you see people, you know, you should thank them and appreciate them, because it was helpful. You know, and then really we had all hands on deck on this. You're never quite sure which person is going to help or have the right influence. And so, you know, it's people in this room, people on this board, you know, Mark Davis, Nick, John, Chairman Cruz, everybody stepped up, Commissioner Myers and the DNR staff. We had a lot of help and support, not just from the IEP team pulling this off. You know, Deputy Commissioner Perry and Gene Terrio really, I would tell you, though, carried the majority of our walk. They were our face before the committees. They were our meetings with the legislators, and the combination of their both knowledge of the project and their ability to work with people was in my mind what put us over the top on this. I think you don't get to be the president of the Senate or a speaker of the House by accident, and it showed in the work we got. Next up, wanted to conclude the due diligence on Pentex. In addition, there'll be input from the community on that, but that's the report you'll get next, and that's the majority of what you're going to see here today on the IEP. Just for timelines, that RFP that we talked about last month to solicit private partners, we expect next week to start contacting parties and inviting them in for pre-solicitation meetings. We've a list of about 15 or 18 potential parties who have expressed interest, and we want, because it's been such a long process, we want to invite them in, talk to them about where we're headed, what we expect to be in the solicitation, and get some feedback on that. And then the week of the 15th, to put out our RFP for private partners for liquefaction in South Central primarily, with options for either North Slope, propane, or gas lines as available alternatives. And that will be on the street, we expect, the middle of May. We'll leave it open for 30 days. As we talked a month ago, we want that timed not exactly in parallel, but close to the competitive solicitation for gas supply in Cook Inlet. And that will still lag a little behind, as that's all being led by DCCED, but that DNR and DOR have roles in that, and so the goal would be in a 30-day period being evaluating proposals concurrent with the solicitation for gas supply being on the street. And so you would expect, when we're to your June meeting, for us to be able to tell you, here's how many respondents we had, and here's what we're evaluating, and the timelines based on the number of responses that we expect to see. Questions on that?
I do. I don't know if you have some questions. I've got a couple questions.
You bet.
One is, when you talk about going down the street for the partner, what methodology or what, I guess, timeline are you anticipating that are we going to do the same thing that happened on North Slope, where we go down a path and a year later we find out that it's really that model wasn't economical, and we start, and we're sitting there looking at each other with a problem, or are you changing the model on how you get to something to get started with something? What's your
There's two pieces to that, because you always want to learn from what you did before. And one is making it a two-step process, so that you winnow down from the 18 or so that have expressed interest to two plus who have both the capacity and the interest that you can go into more serious negotiations with, that you don't go from the whole field to one quite as quickly, in order to maintain your optionality. The other is to build together the entire supply chain at the same time, so that when it comes before the board, you've got not just the small piece of we will build a plant at X, but you have the transportation, the distribution, and the storage and regas components all put together, so that when you've added together the components of your supply chain, you have a picture of where you are.
So that being said, that really tells me it's a round table discussion amongst the players of who's been willing to take what risk in the whole supply chain and the cost associated with it.
Yes, and to some extent, the size of the table is dependent on the responses you get, because we've left open we're probably in the 90th percentile on the draft. So we've left open the option to say, we want to bundle gas supply, liquefaction, and trucking, and here is a price and a methodology to get to that price for just LNG delivered to Fairbanks. Others might only want a piece and tie that to a gas supply contract where you have to concatenate the pieces, and then you have more people around the table. And to some extent, who proposes and the attractiveness of those pieces and their capabilities will decide that. But one, it was a weakness not to have a complete project put together last time in advance of saying let's build a plant and then tie the pieces to it. The other is, by statute, we're now required to do that, so it really doesn't matter if it was, it's an extra step. It's you know, it's one we needed to take, but now before the board acts to use the tools, we need to bring you a complete project so that you can see how it fits together and how Senator Wilkin, though I can't see you, how it plays out to the person on Badger Road. You should be able to see that before we bring you the pieces of here's our partner and why.
No, I didn't have a question, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to offer the comment, one that Mr. Shefchik took me to Badger Road. He made sure that I went to Badger Road when I was in Fairbanks. So there's a good incentive. But the second was just echoing his comments on that plan, that the heart of the intensity between Ada and particularly the House Resources Committee centered around the details of the plan and the framing this up into a package that's complete and from A to B, A to Z, however you want to say that. And so when we come back to the board with that plan, we will be immediately in front of LBNA and Representative Hawker. So we're just going to have to put our homework together.
So that plan will then obviously be approved by the utilities in Fairbanks prior to coming before the board?
I haven't worked out sequencing of who approves what in what order. Clearly, you need the buy-in of the utilities in Fairbanks in order to have it be a legitimate plan. And so whether that's signed agreements or resolutions by their governing bodies, I honestly haven't worked the sequencing of that compared to when it comes to the board. Some of that will depend on, you'll have the last say. So
I'm going to put your old hat back on.
You bet.
I remember that like yesterday, that one of the issues before was that, how could you agree with something if you didn't know what the cost was going to be?
Yep.
And I guess what I want to make sure is we don't put on a path where we're asking the utilities and even this board to agree to something without ultimately knowing what the cost is going to be. And so it's, I'm not going to call it the chicken and the egg, but somehow, in order for the utilities to even give us a resolution that they're supporting, they're going to want to know what the cost is going to be for their consumer, for their customers.
How
dynamics are going to work.
Well, there's two ways I've looked at helping with the dynamics on that from the prior time. One is I've invited the utilities to participate as members evaluating the RFP so that there's more ownership in the selection and the review. And to the extent that they are not participating as a proposer, which some would still have the opportunity to, I've got agreement that, yes, indeed, they'll participate on the evaluation team. So that, one, there's more buy-in in what the ultimate solution is, and that was somewhat of a weakness last time, but not as much, because really you had information from the utilities last time. The other is, rather than a price, a range of acceptable pricing within which the commitments are valid was something that was not used last time that I think will be effective in getting the utilities to step up and say, yes, if you come in with this range, yes, I'm on your team. And that was not part of what we did before.
But final approval by this board will be subject to a definite approval by the utilities before we start going down engineering.
Well, you're not going to get a final approval for any price, regardless of what it is. So say you get commitments by utilities to, if gas comes into town between $10 and $12, put a range on it. And then you say, will you commit to buy gas regardless of the price of the gas? The answer is, we'll get is, well, no, we'll commit if you can bring your project in within a certain range of pricing. And that's a negotiation I expect to see with utilities, not a hesitance to want to be involved, but we need some assurance that you're far enough down the line that the pricing will be within a range. And so you'll spend engineering effort to get to that. And depending on what, you know, how the financing tools are deployed within the project, which is really your purview, is you'll get to ask that question: when will we get to know what the pricing is? And the thing that has to be avoided is it being the last thing decided, rather than earlier on in the game, because we were up to within a week of when things were supposed to close, and there were still not final prices for how things were going to come together. And that part we've got to change. The fact that there's going to be a dance of what range can you be in, what range is acceptable, and how do you narrow your engineering fine enough to know that you're within that scope before you pull the trigger is still going to be there.
So in your analysis of who potential partners would be, one may be able to give you, just theorizing, and one may be able to give you a deliverable price without any taking any risk, lower than if they were to take on risk.
Yeah, oh, almost certainly.
Okay, so and that then goes to how much equity they put in the system and what they expect for the return on investment. Are you going to have some sort of a guideline that you put out in your RFP, the minimum and the maximum, or
we are going to describe the tools that are available, and ask them to say this is how we would like to deploy those tools in combination with what we have in order to pull this off.
Do you anticipate ADA have to take any risk on the supply chain?
Similar to last time, I expect the bypass risk of a pipeline will be a huge discussion item. What happens if there's a pipeline in 10 years if you finance a project over 20? Some use of the sets or equity money to diminish demand risk in the early years. That was structured in the financing before. Those are the tools that come to mind to me that I expect likely will be on the table again. The one thing I did hear from parties about the prior time was and of course you always hear this from the other side, well, you were too prescriptive on how you wanted us to do it, and that made it harder for us to perform. I don't know that I fully accept that, but leaving it open that you have the parties tell you how the finance and tools fit best into their plan really is my belief set anyway. And so that's what we're looking to do.
Appreciate the answer, Bob. I just wanted to...
I see for a ground, man.
Get a question?
Just thinking.
Okay. So really, you'll see the RFP come out first. Will be the first thing you see out. Next will be the request for information, expression of interest on the gas supply will come out, and they'll be parallel. Both for your June meeting, you can expect updates you'll get them in the meantime, but I expect tangible number results that we have this many vendors, here's the range we're in. I would expect, by the time you put 30 days on a solicitation, your June meeting is when you can expect to see that. Re-engagement in that transportation, storage, regas, and distribution optimization. To some extent, because the range of possible outcomes of legislature were so broad, it was hard to be advancing and negotiating when you say, well, it might be this, it might be this, it might be this, let's bargain three different paths. And so that the team will be back on that in the next month. And finally, the distribution build out this summer. Both FNG and IGU are putting pipe in the ground again this summer, and one of the hopes is that when you're up in Fairbanks in June, we'll be able to free up time for those of you that have an interest to go out and actually look at the facilities in Fairbanks, because I think that would be a help as well as it was for Deputy Commissioner.
When you talk about the distribution, one of the things I think placed, pretty important is the conversion.
Yes.
And the ratio, and ultimately you're going to have an assumption and some sort of program or plan. Could you address with the board where we're at on that and what your thoughts are? I mean, I'm not going to hold you to
it. No, the base assumption, the best work we have that both driven by economics and data is the Cardinal Entrix work that was done for AEA. That solid work on conversions and demand in the interior. The thing we're looking at it relative to the just accepting the Cardinal demand curve is now with uncertainty of supply and having built out in Fairbanks last summer and Fairbanks and North Pole this summer, is we're working with NSTAR on logistically how many conversions can you accomplish in a summer. If everybody raised their hand, we'll have 4,000 or 5,000 queued up, and how many crews can you have and how many lines can you stretch, and we might have to temper that demand curve just based on logistics of conversions because of the short summer season. And so we're looking at that now. And so you might see a slight stretching of the demand from Cardinal's effort, not a change of the end result. And though that's probably the last outstanding piece. The other that we'll watch closely, of course, is the price of oil and how does that change. Because we had the sensitivity work done, that if the gap between oil and gas changes, how does that change the demand curve? And we'll weigh that in as well. But those are the pieces that we'll look at. The conversion assistance, we're still headed down two paths, one being working with the private banks and providing some sort of backstop for default like we talked about a month ago. The PACE legislation, Emily's gone. Emily and Sarah and Jean not only helped us on House Bill 105, but carried the PACE legislation, which allows for commercial support for conversions at a municipal level. Got close, but not to the end. So we'll be working on that again next year. But we still see that as the key to the assisting on the commercial large structure side.
Gary,
thank you. In regard to conversions, about 3 weeks ago, Senator Murkowski was in town, and she said, "So what's going on?" It was sort of a meet and greet. I wasn't there, but Bob was good enough to put together a page and a half for her and to recognize her position on appropriations and also on the Energy Committee. So she has. The meeting occurred. They never got to our issue, but it is in her office, and now that the session is over, at least our part, we should think about pushing that piece of paper, and that piece of paper says something to the effect, if you find $50 million in the couch in the federal government, we could use it for conversions. And so Bob, in a very logical bullet point way, said, here's what we could do with $50 million, here's what it would mean to the people of Interior Alaska. So that sits in her office, and we should think about how we want to get that in front of her so that she's thinking about it when she's in those two very important committees. So, Bob, any thoughts?
No. Senator Murkowski's office did come back through the following week with staff and staff from the state of Washington. And as with Juneau, Washington is not in the same situation it was a few years ago relative to that kind of money, but they understand the issue completely. They understand that conversions would be a big piece, and it was carved out so that it was not just, oh, that it's cold and dark and things cost a lot. It was tied to, which is true, It was tied to the air quality and the EPA requirements and the suggestion it might be nice if the EPA was helping solve problems as well as describing them and putting in sanctions. And so you know, you never get told yes if you don't ask. So it was a little more formal than Senator Wilkins looking for change in the couch cushions. But
do you know if Mike Pulaski's been privileged to that letter? He's been involved in it from the energy.
I have not talked to Mike, but yeah. But I will.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Okay. Thank you.
And really, with that concludes my report. Look for Mark and Ted to brief you on the due diligence work that's gone on so far. But I'll be here if you have more questions. Yes, sir.
On the supply side, that's going to go through the Department of Commerce.
DC Commerce.
Okay.
Commerce.
And when it goes to the Department, what does that really mean? Does that mean explain to us what that really means? Is that just a quest to see what's out there, and then utilities ultimately are responsible for cutting the supply contract with the providers?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Are they just taking the lead to see what's out there?
Well, a little more than that, because it's the aggregation of real and potential demand in a market where they're used to how much gas you need, which day, and hourly flows is a different entity than most requests are. And so DCCED Commissioner, Assistant Deputy Commissioner Faraday taking the lead, will put out a solicitation and enter into negotiations to the point of reaching near commercial terms that then the utilities would sign up for. It would not, in fact, that was a huge discussion on House Bill 105 and resources, as what is the state doing entering into gas contracts and buying gas reserves. And, you know, we assured them we're acting on behalf of the utilities, that ADA has no desire, except to the extent that if Pentex is acquired, to enter into gas contracts, and that would be something the utilities would ultimately end up doing. We would have to work with them to make sure that, just like on the previous solution, we don't come up with a solution that the utilities aren't willing to step up to. But that's the idea, is that the crux of pulling off a South Central supply chain, which isn't the only option, but the crux of that really is a longer-term stable gas supply, not unlike, but not as long as, the 30-year running head start that the Anchorage Bowl got on low-cost gas that allowed them to build out the system. For this board to have a comfort level in an investment in a distribution system and a utility, a sense that there's not going to be rate shock in year three in the middle of building up conversions is important. And to that extent, that's why the state is taking a role rather than three independent utilities saying my demand might be this in the few years, is to aggregate those together.
And is that for both North and South supply?
For North supply, we haven't looked at it as North supply, because there is a contract, at least one on the North Slope, that is, Golden Valley has said we will make our contract available if a North Slope option comes open again, as opposed to South Central, where there is not one.
Fred, will the department have authorization from the utilities to negotiate on their behalf, or has there been some?
That's work that's immediately in front of us.
Okay. Gary?
I would just like to take a minute and go on record for the board and for the record to say thank you. Believe it or not, there are still people in Juneau that will talk to me. And so I was privileged and more than willing to be following everyone's efforts, although at arm's length. And as I talked to people about how we were doing in those tumultuous times, the message always came back that the ADA team was doing great. You know, Deputy Commissioner, Speaker Faraday, Senator, President Cario, Bob, Nick, people in this room, the message was consistent that the ADA team, the IED team, was resolute, they were informed, they were respectful. And so, you know, you had this sense that, well, all of this is going to work itself out. And then one day, I was getting kind of an update, and that lady who many of us know but worked for me for 12 years, she says, you know, Gary, she says, I think they just trust him. So I went, because that's the point of the realm in Juneau. And, you know, if you've got that to sell, you pick up a lot of respect and you pick up progress. And that's, when she said that, I went, ah. So the message is not motive, the message is the mission. And you folks were pushing the mission, and you could see the success in spite of it all. So having said that, thank you for engendering confidence and trust in our leaders, and people of Fairbanks appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I told you who I thought carried the walk. So with that...
Any other questions from the board for Bob? I'd like to, on behalf of the board, thank you for your effort so far to date, and look forward to...
Now all we have to do is perform.
That's what you asked for.
I know.
Yeah.
Mark?
All right, next up, Pentex update.
Has left the conference.
Mr. Chairman, just a brief comment while they get in their seats. But Mr. Springsteen and members of the team, I've been heavily using the IEP site, and it's a little bit dated. And so I'd like to be sure that we get. As we get these new materials, that they get uploaded.
Sure.
Have left the conference.
John?
Yes.
You want to introduce your guests?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. So for item 7B is an update on the proposed Pentax acquisition. This time we have Ted Leonard and Mark Gardner, who would like to present.
To the chair and the board, thank you. Fairly quickly, came to the board last month that ADA is looking at the potential purchase of Pentex as a strategic acquisition to assist in moving the Interior Energy Project forward. We've been going through the due diligence that's included environmental, legal, financial plan. We've completed the structure of the proposed agreement if the board wants to go forward, and also an initial finance plan. Very quickly, that we do believe through the financing tools that ADA has that we could potentially reduce the rate in Fairbanks right away by approximately 14%, and analyzing the potential operating expenses of both F&G and the information we've received from IGU that there could be significant savings in operating by, as we've stated before, a combined utility system, and rationalizing a system in Fairbanks that would be one distribution system instead of two separate distribution systems. And we are finishing the due diligence, working with NSTAR and the utilities on potential capital savings that could result from being able to utilize the two systems that are being put into place right now as one, in essence, where you could use a portion of F&G's distribution system to reach potential customers in the IGU area, and both of those are looking promising. We believe that we will be tying up the due diligence within the next 1 to 2 weeks and be able to have a plan to the board in mid-May and for the board to be able to make a decision. Mark was, if it's up to, okay with the chair, he could go through the business structure.
Well, I'd like to ask you, what's left to be tied up on the due diligence? You said another week, so what do you have left to do?
What we have left, Chair, is we're finishing the final environmental due diligence, getting the final reports on the physical inspections of both the plant and the LNG system, and continuing our final work on the potential pro formas with the IEP team. And again, all that's pretty much coming together by the end of next week.
Okay. I understand that it's become public knowledge of what the Titan purchase is and how that affects the sale.
Yes, to the chair, that again, our potential sale or the total assets that we would be purchasing are 52.5 plus another 1.5 for working capital. And the purchase price of the Titan facility and the LNG stations is 15.1.
And that's by harvest, which is helpful?
Yes. So our total cash into it at that point in time is approximately
38.85.
So it'd be 37 plus the working capital.
Yes.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
You want me to? Yeah, let's go.
There you go.
Okay.
Here, I'll do it.
There you go.
Ted, you ran that for 6 years.
Now you know why I'm retired.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm Mark Gunner with Western Financial Group, and I've been working with the IEP team on this project. What we talked about part of this, the plan is that the Pentex FNG would continue to operate with its current team under AIDA ownership while we're negotiating the transition to what we're calling a local control entity, with the goal of having that by the end of 2016. And then structuring an exit for AIDA's investment through SETs and state appropriation and bonds. We'll talk a little bit about that when we get into it here. We've estimated with the pro formas we have now that would result in about a $2.9 million return to AIDA, roughly 5.06%, which is reflective of the credit and AIDA's regulations for this type of a financing.
Mark, is that on an annual basis, or how do you
that's
come
the total,
up with
sir?
How do you,
it's 5.06 for 2 years, roughly. It's a little more complicated than that. But.
So on an annual basis, it's 2.5%.
No, it's 5.06 each of the years.
Each year,
yes.
Right.
Okay.
So
sorry.
It's a yield of 5.06.
Sorry. Okay. So it's 2.91 yes. million
for the year and approximately a year and a half.
Half. Right.
For holding that
asset. The structure is a purchase of the membership interests of Pentex Alaska Natural Gas Company, which is an LLC. That LLC is the sole member of the others that are listed there. The sellers are Harrington Partners, a company in Texas, confusingly named the same, and Dan Thornton. A little bit on the details. I won't spend a lot of time on this. There's at the point of signing the agreement, assuming it's approved by the board, there's a deposit that converts then at the time of closing to a holdback amount, which is I'll talk about in a little bit, and then the remainder of the purchase price would be paid at closing. The target for closing is July 31st, the details will be available to you, but there are typical representations and warranties here. And prior to closing, after an agreement is signed and prior to closing, they will continue their ordinary business ADA will seek expedited RCA approvals, and ADA will have the approval of certain changes to disclosures. So basically, status quo from signing to closing as much as possible. As we've discussed, there are in place agreements between Pentex and Harvest, which provide for the sale of the Titan and AET assets to Harvest Alaska for $15.15 million. Paired with that is an agreement to provide LNG to FNG for 10 years with an initial price of $15 per MCF and then adjusted over time. And then it's a little more complicated than that, but in shorthand terms, there's a price open on that contract at the sixth year.
So, Mark, is that $15 for 5 years, and then the price opener, or is that $15, or do you have inflation on top
it's,
of that?
It's $15 with an escalator after 2 years, but then an opportunity to seek a lower price after the fifth year.
And the escalator is based on?
It's a negotiated amount, and I'm sorry, I'd have to look at it too.
It was 2%. Is still that?
Yes. Yeah, those contracts are unchanged.
Could we eventually get the board to see what that actually is per year?
Yes. Okay. Yes, sir. And then, once the agreement between Pentex and ADA is signed, then you know, we can discuss whatever would be appropriate with Harvest. That agreement, those agreements are expected to close in the fall, and they are subject to RCA approval and Attorney General's review.
Jerry?
Excuse me, Mark. I'm playing catch up here. Mm-hmm. So that 15 is for a prescribed amount of gases.
Yes, I'm sorry. I should have had that there. Thank you. It's for the existing customer base, and which is estimated in the agreements to be between 0.85 and 0.95 BCF per year. It does not apply to expansion customers for FNG.
So by this agreement, we agree that we are going to take 0.95 BCF at 15 MCF, and anything else comes at some other price.
Yes, sir. Up 2.95 BCF for the existing customer base.
Yes.
That period.
And if we need another 1.01B, we can go get it somewhere else for some other price.
Yes, sir.
Higher or lower.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right,
thank you.
1.15, that's 15 where?
That's at the inlet to storage in Fairbanks. Just a little bit more about the structure. There are kind of standard conditions precedent to this kind of an agreement, plus a requirement that there be RCA approval of the change of control of Fairbanks Natural Gas. A utility owned by ADA would not be subject to RCA regulation, rate regulation, but the change of control of FNG, which is the certificated utility, does require RCA approval. And the other significant conditions precedent include ADA satisfaction with the results of the environmental assessments, and that there have been no unapproved changes to the business between signing the agreement and closing. And the sellers have a certain number of indemnity obligations to ADA, and ADA can recover for losses due to a breach of the agreement, some pre-closing environmental liabilities, and a couple of others. And those recoveries can occur from the holdback amount for a year, and then the draft agreements provide that there would be an indemnity from Harrington Partners, which is the largest, which is the 85% owner, for certain obligations capped at $12 million in total. And then ADA is indemnifying the sellers for 3 years for a breach, And ADA's, which is a requirement of the laws under which ADA operates, ADA's indemnity is subject to appropriation and is also capped at $12 million. There are provisions for termination of the agreement, one being, of course, if the conditions precedent are not satisfied by July 31st. And then ADA has the conditions that if there is some material adverse effect on the Pentex businesses prior to that time, if some of the disclosures about the companies are amended without ADA's approval, and again, if the environmental assessments are not satisfied. And the somewhat too far, but the deposit or holdback amount is retained by the sellers if ADA breaches, and it's available to ADA otherwise. So there, you know, the agreement's a lot longer than that. Of course, that's a very shorthand version of it, but those are the key features. So then moving on to the investment, the project funding. This is structured as an investment from the economic development account of the revolving fund. And the small table there shows the way it's structured. So the $54 million in cash going out projected in July. Then assuming that
the... left the conference.
Assuming that the harvest... transaction closes, $15.15 million coming back in, leaving that $38.85 million, and then the return of that investment and the return on investment in for this projection that we have in Q1 of 2017. And that relates then to the schedule, which is
Mr.
on.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry.
Can we back up? I need to refresh myself just because I'm rusty. The Titan AET sale for $15.15 million, that is the liquefaction plant?
Itself. Yes, sir. That's the liquefaction
and
plant,
the
trucks.
The parent.
Yep, the trucks, right. And the fueling stations.
And then, Mr. And the Chairman.
Contract. Yes.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
And the contract.
And the gas supply contract.
Right. And then on the... slide 10, the $38.85 million. So ADA essentially is assuming a sale to a local entity at the balance of the valuation we're making in this due diligence process.
Yes, sir.
But if that's an arm's length transaction, that's subject to some risk.
Yes, it is.
Do we have a description of that risk?
We do, and... that is one of the things that we're working further on for the next week or so to make sure that we have that characterized in a way that it's helpful to the board.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So then on the next slide, we have a schedule that kind of lays out those steps. So, you know, we're assuming that we're able to get the information and the board makes a decision in April and the purchase agreement is signed.
In May.
Sorry, May. April's not even on there. You know, we would be submitting for expedited approval by the RCA of the change of control. Then again, the targeted closing for this transaction, July 31st, and the closing of the Titan AET sale to Harvest in September. Then working with the utilities and the other interests in the Fairbanks North Star Borough with the goal of having an agreement about planning for utility consolidation by the end of this year, having the financing structured for that consolidation by mid-16 and completing that sale by December of 16. Now, it's the actual nature of that transaction is not determined, obviously. So, I mean, it might be a sale, it might be a lease, but the financial effects are likely to be the same. But the objective and the strategy for the investment is the transfer of Fairbanks Natural Gas to a local consolidated utility.
I
Local consultant. So just do a what if. Does that mean by June 30th or 16th, Acme Gas would own that? You're going to sell it to Acme Gas? Is that a new gas company? Or
well, no. I mean, the highest likelihood is that it's a consolidation of FNG into IGU.
So IGU would
say
be
that
the
again.
Gas utility for Fairbanks and North Pole, run by, they would go out and find someone to run it?
Well,
they would go get Acme Gas?
To be determined by the ultimate controlling entities of the utility in Fairbanks and North Harbor.
How IGU plans on contracting to a third party to run it, not to set up the municipal utility.
And we're not. The reason I'm hedging a little bit, Mr. Wilkin, is because we're not presuming how they would structure that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So then briefly...
Mark, could I just say one other thing on that? And to the board, that with all these schedules, it's going to be in conjunction with working with the intern Bob's team on gas supplies and all that too. So it's just not in a separate area over here, but this is in conjunction working with the Interior Energy Project on storage and trucking and all the other components that are needed.
I guess the seat of the pants just says to me, boy, this is really an accelerated schedule. Perhaps somebody to make a business decision what amounts to 14 months from now. But this is you guys' deal.
Well, to Chair Mr. Wilkin, you know, the reality is that the community has been thinking about and working ideas and strategies about this for some time, that ADA has, both the state and ADA, have funded a considerable effort for the planning of the utility of the delivery of gas utility services for the borough as a whole, and specifically for IGU and IGU's territory. So, I mean, we're not, I guess I would say that there's I don't think this is that aggressive, given all the work that's already been done to plan for providing gas service to this region.
Good. Thank you.
So, we've talked through a little of this already, but just to make one point that's clear, one of the reasons that we're able to speculate that we'll be able to reduce the price of gas immediately is that the fact is that Fairbanks Natural Gas is a privately owned profit-making entity. It has obligations on cash that will not be there for a utility that's owned by ADA, including taxes, return on equity. There are some investor management fees and a relatively, right now anyhow, a relatively high obligation for regulatory affairs expenses, which would not be there under ADA ownership. And we have projected some reductions to cost that result from that, and also the reductions in rates that can be delivered because of that. So that's the initial step is make the acquisition with the operating team in place. It's a long-standing cash flow positive business that knows how to deliver gas and run pipe. Then plant, work with the community and the utilities to plan for an integrated and consolidated system, which is both about capital and operations. And then implement the financing for that, longer-term financing for the gas utility and transition to the local control entity. We've done some very high-level projected financials for both Fairbanks Natural Gas alone under this structure and then for what a consolidated utility might look like. And this is a very summary version of what you'll get in much greater detail next month. But this takes it out through the transition to a longer-term financing. Initially, as Mr. Leonard said, the projection is for roughly 14% reduction in rates from the current rates and a larger percentage reduction as the system grows. Now, all these numbers here, we're assuming that the Interior Energy Project continues apace with achieving additional supply of gas and with the expansion of the storage and storage regas and distribution. So we're going from the current roughly 0.85 to 0.95 BCF per year utility to utility in FNG's case that is 3.4, 3.5 BCF at the end of this period. And that's what allows the ability to continue to lower rates and makes us confident that we can we could achieve the IEP goals, assuming additional gas becomes available. Now, there is, we also have for you, when we come back for a decision, we have a what if all that doesn't happen projection. And, you know, the fact is that this is an operating utility that's been generating profit for some time. And, you know, as this kind of investment goes, is relatively low risk in that regard. But it doesn't look as good for the ratepayers in that scenario because you don't have an expanded base of customers. On the next slide, you know, we talk about the transition to the local control entity, and we'll move to the potential savings. As Mr. Leonard said, we've got some time scheduled in the next week to really hone in on the numbers with the numbers wizards from IGU and spend some more time with Mr. Britton about his part of it. But we've done an analysis of the operating costs for FNG as they are now. We've used IGU's projections of their operating costs as a standalone utility, and then looked at what it might look like if we combined the utilities into a consolidated utility, and out of that have estimated savings, which I can't see on the printed version, but annual savings of about $1.8 million on the operating side, which is, you know, intuitively, instead of having the management structure and the overhead for two utilities, you've got one. And instead of, you know, so, and that includes things like how you handle billing and all the other stuff that goes with running utility. So, the, you know, 1 plus 1 when put together is not 2, it's 1.7 or something like that, and that's what these numbers reflect. So with those, with that concept for an operating savings, but not yet reflecting any significant capital savings, because we don't have those numbers yet, we put together also you know, a rough pro forma for what the consolidated utility would be able to do with rates. And as you see the table on the top of the page there, you know, without getting too aggressive, but with assuming there's additional supply at a relatively low cost and that the expansion continues and people hook up, that you know, we're at 1589 per MCF for the consolidated utility in 2020, and that's with a total of about $225 million of capital, which is the storage that's needed, and the buying the system, buying FNG from ADA, and the expansion of the two distribution systems.
Mr. Chairman? So that $15.89 is the burn-up tip price, not the gate price, correct?
Yes.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the $225 million of capital, you referenced storage. What's the storage cost assumption?
We're assuming $50 million. For storage?
For 5 million gallons.
Yeah, right down, right at some point. Second bullet there. Yeah. Right down to use of funds.
What's the size of that storage estimate, though? 5 million gallons? So it's $10 a gallon?
No, there's more than 5 million in that estimate because that also assumes a tax credit. So the total amount of the actual cost for storage.
It's something gallons.
Oh, gallons?
I split to gallons, but I'm interested in the tax credit. What's the tax credit?
There's a state per facility $15 million storage tax credit.
And the other thing in...
So it's $65 million for 5 million gallons. Absolutely.
Yeah, we made it for this purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
That's more than 5 million gallons.
It is more than 5 million gallons.
How big is it?
Frankly, we put in a large capital number with the expectation that it was going to be more than five, but without setting it
an
exact gallon amount.
And, excuse me, Chair. That $223 million does include the $52.78 million that the board's already approved for distribution to. That's not additional to what has already been approved. That
all
includes
in
all in.
Okay.
Well, just to circle back, the $15.89, that's meter cost?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I thought the question was answered. It was burner tip, but it's meter.
Yes, you're right. It's meter. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, I
give me again on the 15.
That was 15...
to the house
storage.
No, that 15. The 15 on the harvest contract is at the inlet to the FNG system.
City gate.
So the delta to get from there to the burner tip is 8. Well, it's $5.
Yes.
In 16.
Yes.
So to regas, store, and distribute is 5.
Approximately.
Yes, approximately. Although it depends on which year and how many MCFs you're pouring through.
It goes down as you get more capacity or more demand that spreads that fixed dollar amount over more MCFs.
So basically, you're 1B now and you're going to 6, right? So you're 15%.
But not at 16.
No, not by 20.
This was the 3.4 or 3.5.
So what's the assumption then on the cost of gas delivered to storage in Fairbanks beyond the 0.95?
The assumption right now is in the range of the IEP goals. In this model, it was using $11 as the price that would come in for the new gas. And part of the contract with Harvest deals with, and looking at that after 5 years, mm-hmm. that there is that price opening that would be involved with how much other utilities are getting gas. So at that point in time, the price.
So, Mr. Chairman, so can you discuss the... If you have a 0.95 BCF at $15 and you're assuming 11, how are you... I understand there's timing issues here and averaging, but it's hard to get to 11 when you start at 15.
Well, we have the projections that we're using, Deputy Commissioner, do blend the cost because we do have that cost at 15 for the first 0.85, 0.95 BCF.
For the first 5.
And then the expansion, cost... is starts at the 11, and so by the end of the period, the blended cost is 12 something. When you've got to the point that you've got 5 or 6 BCF, then that first one doesn't hurt you so much, basically.
Remind me, wasn't the North Slope gas estimated about $13.50 to Fairbanks?
To the chair, yes.
Okay.
$13 to $13.50 was the range.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, while you mentioned Fairbanks, I kept watching the Dalton Highway blockade and thinking how glad I was when we were coming out of Peru. I know that's a temporary solution, but those were pretty... That was a substantial period of time.
For that section,
yeah. $5 million.
They've been flooding that thing's been flooding since the 90s. Wilson?
So two questions then. Is there capital to be spent to get to the $11 gas, or do you believe the market will take you there on gas beyond the 0.95?
Well, there actually is capital to be spent from the other part of the interior energy project that we're assuming the process that Bob was talking about, that that Bob and Nick are, and Deputy Commissioner Faraday are involved with for additional gas. There is state capital that can be invested in that process as well.
For the raw gas or for the liquefaction?
For liquefaction.
Liquefaction transportation.
Yes, second one is the tax credits. Who will get to use the tax credits?
The utility.
They'll sell them?
They sell them, yeah. Don't move the mouse. This is a 4488172 investment. It has statutory requirements to go with it, which include, you know, demonstrating that we have that it's suitable investment, that it creates economic development. We've actually talked about a lot of this already, so I won't spend much time on it.
I actually have a question on slide 13, the third bullet point, or the third dash line under the first bullet point. Mm-hmm. Certain non-cash expenditures, depreciation, can be eliminated from the rate structure. I simply don't understand that. How can you eliminate depreciation out of a rate structure when you've got to sustain your asset into the future?
We do that in a municipal utility structure, Deputy Commissioner, it effectively gets wrapped into the debt service and the capital reserves that are carried going forward. But in the short run, we don't have that.
All right, I connect the dots for me, because you have depreciation. Anytime you're operating something, you've got to retain earnings or somehow cover the
reserve. In this particular circumstance, where we're going from the current situation through a short-term ownership by ADA and then to a structure that's taken out with long-term utility debt, we don't need to collect from the ratepayers for depreciation during that interim period for it to work. Right.
And then you set up a plan
from that point on, you set up a plan reserve. So we have, in our projections, we have, of course, the debt service that we have to pay to support the acquisition of the utility and all the expansion we're talking about. And there's an annual budget item that is the functional equivalent of depreciation, but actually is used to make improvements to the utility plant.
So it's real cash instead of book.
Yes, exactly, Mr. Chair. Okay.
If it works, let's send it out to the villages.
pursuing both the our statutory obligations and then support of the IEP goals, most of this, again, we've already talked about. But that's why this is a strategic investment for ADA, because it uses capital provided by the state for us to leverage the investment to bring together the utilities and make it more likely that the goals of the IEP can be achieved. Just a little bit on, we've talked about this before, so I'll just summarize again the due diligence process. We've been gone through a financial, technical, and legal review. We've had a third-party assessment of the price to make sure that we're in the ranges that should be appropriate for that. We've examined the Hillcorp agreements. We have a draft finance plan, and then we have to assure that we've got the numbers, realistic numbers that show that we can get close to the IEP goals. And another part of the process is to solicit review and advice from the local governments. We've started that process, but that's another part that has to be completed before we come back to you with a decision. I will say that in the due diligence, it was a great combined effort by the FinTech's representatives and by various members of the ADA team, Mark Davis and Jerry Jude on the legal side, and Kirk Warren managing the technical side with assistance from other members of the ADA team. There were no ugly surprises found. It was a very straightforward, very complete and straightforward process, and did not result in anything that would cause us to say we should not move forward.
Mr. Chairman, this is a very minor point, but I note on slide 18 that we switched from ADA Board 430 to Legislative Budget and Audit 212. So we've repurposed these slides, which is completely appropriate, but we will be in front of Legislative Budget and Audit again. And really all I want to call out is that's all hands on deck. That needs to go well, given the legislative history of 105 this last 2 months.
You only got one good leg left.
I missed the date, too. Yeah. Sorry, Deputy Commissioner.
No worries. It's a perfectly valid set of slides, but... just reminded me of LBNA
switching over there.
As I mentioned, as part of the due diligence, we engaged a third party expert team to evaluate the price. This is the Brown Group, and you'll have more detailed information about their background, but they are experts in utility economics and valuation, they put together a draft report, which will be final by next week, which
has joined the conference.
Does give us a sense of the how that $54 million and other related parts of the cost compare both to what they call traded comparables, which are basically publicly traded companies where you can look at the value based on the stock price, and then M&A transactions where you're looking at actual sale and purchase of utilities, and looking at both the enterprise to book value and enterprise to cash flow. We're comfortable that the results of that are acceptable, but it'll ultimately be your decision, but we think we'll have a good report to bring forward to you. I see I have my slides out of order here because I do have the... No, it's the right place. Risks and risk mitigation, obviously part of this you identify in due diligence, but part of it is just part of any transaction like this. Just very briefly, and again, there's way more detail on this coming to you. We have identified, limited environmental risk. There is a known situation at the Port McKenzie plant for which we had, first of all, Harvest Hill Corp was gracious enough to give us their environmental assessment, so we used that, and then we had some of our own assessments done, and it confirmed that we are not concerned about the environmental condition of the assets that we're purchasing with these companies. We'll be dotting I's and crossing T's on that over the next couple of weeks, but it looks very good. We mentioned the regulatory, the RCA approval of change of control, should be straightforward, but it is their decision, not ours, so that is a potential risk, and that's why that's a condition precedent to us closing.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One is, do you have the timing of that? Is there a target date?
Well, we don't have timing of a meeting. Our target date is for that to be completed in June, but that kind of depends on when we start, and we're figuring out how to do the expedited version of that.
And then, Mr. Chairman, this question might be for Director Emeritus Leonard, but if something hiccups in that approval, what is the backup plan if that sale were not to go forward?
Excuse me, for interrupting, Deputy Commissioner, these are two different approvals. So the one we're talking about here is the...
I think it's the approval of the harvest.
The harvest agreements, yeah. That is later.
To Deputy Commissioner, again, if that is, as we identified in the risk structure, a risk to this whole project is that if we go through the process, RCA approves the transfer of control, then we do own all of the assets to Pentex, which includes that sale to Harvest. So if the AG or a regulatory agency
disallows
the sale, then ADA would own the LNG facility. And at that point in time, we would look at that as an ADA project, and we would look at either going out to sell that facility, or again, like ADA has done in the past, we would look at finding a operator that would lease that asset and run that asset, as we do with the Ketchikan Shipyard, as we do with the Fed Express hangar and those things. So again, that is a risk to this whole project, that moving forward, if there was a regulatory objection, we would own that asset.
Bob, wouldn't that also would roll that up into the whole IDP process itself as
yes,
part of as part of a as bringing something it would bring something to the table with a partner that ultimately, you know, obviously the plan isn't big enough. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it could be in addition to a sale or operation. It could be a sale operation expansion. The goal would be private party running it and expanding.
Or ultimately owning it.
Yes.
Owning it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. And that is a potential end IEP project too, even if that asset is transferred, that as part of the process, that plant could be expanded through the IEP process with Harvest.
And if those agreements were not approved and that transaction didn't close, it would revert to the, or still be in the situation where there's a gas supply agreement from Hillcorp to Pentex through March 31st of 2018. So we'd have to either, you know, we'd enter into negotiations with parties to provide gas beyond March 31st, 2018.
And we would have personnel through F&G Pentex that would operate.
I mean, they were operating it now.
Right.
Gary?
Will ADA participate in the docket leading to this decision with RCA? Or will ADA/IEP just be silent?
The Harvest agreements?
Leading up to the RCA decision. They'll have an open docket, take testimony and all that. Will we participate?
Yes, to the... Jerry, I guess Jerry is our expert right now, but we would start the process if the board believes that it's still in our best interest to move for the process, that we would start next week starting the process of working with Pentex on completing the application. And through that process with the RCA, ADA would be involved since we would be looking at a change of control of the utility license.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up. So the one risk to the Harvest agreements is the RCAAG approval, but what is Hillcorp's ability to walk away from that deal?
It's the only significant contingency is the RCA and AG approval.
Is the RCA.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other area of risk that we haven't yet talked about, because we touched on both regulatory and gas supply, is the economic and financial risk. There are ordinary business risks with any operating business. Again, as these things go for an investment for a development finance agency, this one's relatively secure because it's an operating business that's already cash flowing and doesn't require additional investment to continue to cash flow. You know, there is a concern that once ADA owns the utility, there will be political risk on the rates, and you know, our investment in the utility has to be structured in a manner that makes it clear that it's an investment. And then, you know, another risk, of course, for any utility is the relative cost of the fuel that we're providing to our customers versus oil. You know, there's a base case operating plan for FNG, which will be part of your final financial plan that will, you know, provide a scenario with long-term low oil costs. But we're confident that the utility can be run in that manner. It won't be the positive picture we would hope to have with the IEP, but you know, a scenario where oil stays low for a long time, natural gas conversions will be difficult. But the existing customer base is there, and there are reasons that they would continue to buy gas. So the next steps, just to wrap up here, as Mr. Leonard said, final technical environmental due diligence completed, meeting with the community groups and getting their feedback, their input back to the board, finalizing the financial plan. We're hoping that there will be an opportunity for the board to get a chance to tour the Pentex facilities in the next 30 days, and then present the decision to the board in May. And then the rest of the timeline follows from there.
Chairman? I want to back up to the storage tank study. I just want to know the sourcing of those numbers. I understood from earlier iterations of these presentations that one of the values we had from the North Slope work that's gone on was chunks of it were applicable, the distribution study, the conversion study, the storage tank study. But I couldn't find that storage tank study or evaluation on the IEP website. So I just want to understand the basis for those numbers, because it's not my chunk, it's Mr. Shepchik's chunk. But I know that I understand that data exists. I just want to understand it more deeply.
That was modeling work done by MWH. It was not a formal study, so it looked at the cost of...
Is it in the MWH tab of the IEP website?
No, it is not.
We can get that.
It's modeling work that was done based on cost per gallon of storage, and as the cost per gallon decreases, as your storage increases, and how much storage you need as your demand increases. So it's a financial model, not a report.
So it's a different calculus with the Cook Inlet supply than it is with the North Slope supply.
The volume of storage required is a different.
The volume of storage and the trade-off.
It's not an engineering study that costs the construction.
Correct. It has some assumptions on the cost of construction.
And we do have good costs with working with Pentex, and could get information on Dan on total cost of the 5.2 million gallons.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be interested in that data.
Okay. I assume you can get that one.
Yes, sir.
The one risk that isn't there that I guess I'd like to hear what your thoughts are is the sale to IGU in the first quarter of 16.
So that's the same scenario that I was talking to you about, where the IP doesn't happen. So that's the scenario. We do have some projections which we'll have in the final financial plan for you for a basically status quo going forward for this investment. The ADO would face a decision at that time about whether to market the utility to a third party. There is a demand for operating utilities that is actually fairly robust right now. The natural gas local distribution companies are good investments. So there would be other options.
Leasing to an operating company.
Yeah, leasing to an operating company, mm-hmm. maintaining the asset. There's another option.
So there could be a risk that we would have the asset long term with a lease. Again, like some of the other long term assets we have. So there is a risk, as you're saying, with that.
But what I'm hearing is it's not really a risk, because it's not a financial risk, because there's clearly other options.
Right.
Yes, that's right, sir.
Could be a risk to the quick exit strategy that we're looking at currently.
And just one other, not necessarily the same as risk, but the cost of oil. If the crude goes up, this looks better and better.
Yes.
You bet.
Yes.
And that was the same as we were working on the Interior Energy Project in the first round, that $30, you were more worried about not having enough gas, too many conversions. And as gas went down, of course, that has an effect on total demand, how much gas you're going to need, what the conversions are, and changing of that model.
Karen?
Well, I guess I just hits me like a brick. So a year from now, after we've laid another 60 miles of pipe, and a year from now, we're going to go. FNG is going to sell their gas for what they're selling at Workday, 23.7. Okay, they got their 1,100 customers. But we're going to go to customer number one, the family on Badger Road, and we're going to say, we've got some gas for you, and it's 22.15 plus 2 plus 5. And. IGU is going to go to their first customer, and they're going to say, "I got a deal for you, and it's more expensive than oil." And somehow we have to package that up to use up that 0.9. This conversion thing keeps coming back at me. How does IGU get their first 1,000 customers when you're selling something that not only costs more, but you have to spend $5,000 to have the opportunity to pay more? This worries me. I'm going to work through it. I'm not throwing in the towel. I'm just going to figure out a way to do it. So,
Mr. Chairman, could I just probe Senator, when you said 22, I thought we were coming in at 1589. I mean, that's obviously an estimate.
15 at the gate, 2 plus gas, 2 to gas.
No, that number is 15.
89 is a meter in 2020.
Well, I'm talking about next July 1st. Let's just use that.
Okay. Yeah.
It's 20 plus 2 plus 5.
Mm-hmm. It's 20. It'll be 20 if we bought.
Right.
Yes.
$20.
$20.
FNG.
So then let's take the 20. What?
No. Well, if there were gas available, put in those pipes.
Yes.
And if it were in the supply we're talking about here, we would be talking about pricing it at $20 to the customer.
How do you get to 20? What's your math to get to 20?
We have the existing utility, and we have lower costs because we have taken out some cost items.
15 to the city gate. $2 to gas.
No, we're not at. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, no, you're right. Go ahead.
15 plus 2 gas for gas.
1
plus 5. And that number's a little squishy to distribute. That's 22.
No, the 2 is the 5. In our numbers is
includes storage,
everything from
distribution
gas down.
What's the distribution cost?
Distribution cost inclusive of storage will range from $5 at the model that they put together, and it'll decline to in a range of just over 4 as demand increases. So really you are adding more things in than would happen under a combined utility expected model.
So we're going to go to those folks. And with the 40% savings, that takes current FNG down to 20.
Yes.
So we're going to go to those folks with that same $20.
No.
Right. No.
Well. I don't want to stand up from the back and say what you'd be looking at is saying that you're going to increase demand. Mm-hmm. And as that demand increases, unit costs will go down. And in a growing utility, you won't say we're going to go from 20 to 19, 50 to 19, and then get to that 1589. Uh-huh. You're going to drop it down. And if the average cost across 10 years would be $15.90. You would start in the $15.50 and you'd end up in the $16.50, so that you have a drop with a 1.5 to 2.5% annual increase, so that people can expect a decrease in cost to want to convert and have a known trajectory that's within a reasonable range of the cost of inflation as you're growing your customer base. And that gets back to some of the discussion of why not being rate regulated is an advantage in doing initial rate setting, is you can do that and you can use the set financing, which pushes off your payments until that demand increases. And so that's how you get around the, how you get from 20 to how you get conversions in the 15 to 16 range, is you take advantage of the patient capital on the sets in order to do that.
And also takes into account of blending.
The blending of the lower cost
gas.
Incremental gas.
But my thought is, what happens next year when right now we're trying to sell that family on Badger Road? An idea that they need gas and you need to convert your furnace to get it, and they're going to say, what's it going to cost me? And we're going to say, well, $20 for MCF. And they're going to say, well, wait a minute, it's cheaper. Well,
$20 for MCF, there is not any additional gas for any new customers on that road. It's only when you bring in new gas that you have the ability to go to someone and say, will you sign up as a new customer?
Yes.
And you have to bring that new gas in at a lower cost of 15 in order to be able to start accomplishing that.
Right now you have no gas.
Right now you can't go to a customer on Badger Road and say you can't have the gas because there isn't.
But we can next day.
No. Mm-hmm. There's no plan. There's no plan for passing.
Next April.
Oh, because the 0.95 is being used by FNG.
Yeah.
Right.
So depending on who your partner out of your RFP and who you select, some will be able to buy gas earlier than others, and we might have to wait. Well, do you have to wait a year and a half, or do you wait 3 years, and what will the relative cost be? But it's only when we are successful in expanding capacity that you get to adjust your rate structure.
So where I'm wrong is that I'm thinking of that 0.95, selling those molecules.
Those are sold.
That's Dan's stuff. He gets to keep using those. And
at
23.45. So every new molecule, we get another bite at the apple and try to come in at some number
right. That
we can sell.
Yes, except
yeah. You're
going to want to blend them, so that the new customers aren't getting preferential rate over the existing. And that's the part where it gets, you have to have a blended rate and you have to just work your capital in, is because you don't want to tell somebody on Badger, I'm going to sell it to you for $15.25, and somebody at one of the box stores, your cost is $20.20. Then you're going to have to blend those together. And so you don't get to drop them and give yourself internal hemorrhaging from cash flow because you've dropped the first 0.95B as well as the rest. You have to blend it.
So that whole conversation can't start until we get the first molecules above 0.95.
So we can model it. We can show you, but the actual, that sit down with the discussion on somebody on Badger Road starts when you know you have a gas supply to fill that pipe.
And we'll know that with...
tell you how successful we are in doing
after
all
your partner. Okay. All right, thank you. Thanks
and,
for the time.
And you've got other people here that can stand up and say if they think I'm in the range of reasonable, but that's...
No, we're okay.
That's okay.
Yes, I'm
wrong. Well, thank you. So one of the other risks is being able to find $11 gas.
Yes, sir.
Sure. Right.
In order to make the Interior Energy Project successful and the reduced rates... Or all of Fairbanks.
Increase the volume by 6 times. What kind of efficiencies and price break can you get? Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to do.
Yep.
Over what period of time?
Mm-hmm. 5 years. Is that right? 5 years. 2020.
That's what the model
is. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that it for you, Mark?
That's it.
Dad, really?
Yeah.
Well, that is.
That's in public. We still request a second session to discuss.
Are there any further questions from the board? All right. Any more questions for the board?
Thank you.
All right. So that concludes 7B. 7C is up now. Executive session. Okay, I'll entertain a motion and go into executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board enter into an executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the Interior Energy Project Pentex and confidential financial information related to a potential development finance project.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. With no objection, we'll go into the executive session. What room, John?